This episode is sponsored in part by Viral Sweep. Thinking of running a giveaway or contest? Meet Viral Sweep, the app that makes it easy to build and manage campaigns that drive traffic and boost brand visibility. With Viral Sweep, you can engage customers through Instagram giveaways, automate winner selection, and ensure smooth prize distribution. Viral Sweep also keeps you compliant with legal regulations, so you don't have to stress about the details. Plus, you get helpful analytics and seamless integrations to make campaign management a breeze. Need a hand with setup? Viral Sweep support team and managed services are ready to help. Start engaging your audience today. Download Viral Sweep on the Shopify App Store and watch your brand grow. New customers can get 50% off the annual plan. Just tell them in the live chat that the unofficial Shopify podcast sent you. That's Viral Sweep. Today on the unofficial Shopify podcast, we're doing a listicle. Yes, we're going to run through the top mistakes Shopify store owners make. Totally opinionated, but from the angle of two Shopify partners with, geez, combined what? What are we at here for e-commerce experience? 40 years maybe?
Oh,
I can't
man.
Be that old, Jay.
I started in 1998. When did you? Yeah, it's got to be up there.
1998.
Well, that was when I heard my first store. So Shopify 2009.
All right, you've been at it longer than mine, longer than me. I've been on Shopify Partners since 2011 or 2012. And yeah, in 1998, my first foray into e-commerce would have been retail arbitrage, selling Furbies on eBay.
Same as well. Mine was archery supplies on eBay. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah, in the 90s, it was like eBay was the gateway.
eBay should have been like what Amazon was. Like it was, man, some days I was like 19 years old making a couple thousand bucks a day. It was crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. When you're 19, you're like, I'm going to live forever.
Yeah.
Jay, Mr. Myers, 30 seconds. What does Bolt do these days?
Oh man. Well, we are doing what we've always done. We've got a suite of apps that we help Shopify merchants make more money. And so like I was a Shopify store owner since 2009, started building the apps for my stores. And then eventually that became Bold. And so we've got everything from memberships and subscriptions tools, upselling, customer pricing tool, which lately has been really popular, you know, stores that want to give, VIP pricing and different prices to different customer segments, maybe like clubs, dropshippers, employee pricing, wholesaling. That's become really popular. Just a suite of different things that help stores.
No, absolutely. And so you have such experience and a view into, you know, the various operations of stores. And really, you're probably like me on the receiving end of a lot of support or work requests that come across your desk that you get pulled into. And yep. So we can quickly see, all right, here are some things that separate successful stores and, you know, stores that are less successful. And so our top 10 mistakes. What are our top 10 mistakes that e-com store owners make? And I don't think we have these in any particular order.
No particular order, but I think, you know, we chatted about a month ago. We said, we're doing a podcast together. What should it be on? And we both kind of said, like, let's make a list of like the things that you just absolutely should not get wrong. And some of them, I think, are more obvious than others. Some of them, maybe I think a lot of people might not have thought of before. But these are all simple things that I think every single merchant should be able to get right. Like it doesn't take a lot of technical knowledge to fix these things. These are they're like conceptually simple things, but yet some of the biggest brands in the world make these mistakes. So yeah. How do you want to kick this off? Should we just like top to bottom kind of thing?
Yeah. And in fact, I will open with, you said some of the biggest brands in the world make this mistake. I will go with the number one simplest mistake I see is people who forget to style the checkout. You'll be on a store that costs somebody like $100,000 to build with a big fancy agency. And then you get to the checkout, it's just like plain text logo, right? It's just a very common mistake that I think is easy to mistake, or a very common mistake that is easy to make. And it takes, you know, 60 seconds to fix. Just go and check out settings and upload your logo at the very least.
And bare minimum, I'll just say on checkout, like I always say the checkout is the handshake. And it's like, imagine you have a great shopping experience in a store, you do everything, and then you get to the cashier and she or he is grumpy, or it's not you bumble with your card or it's not enjoyable. Like, it ruins the whole experience. And so it's so important for not just converting that sale, but then turning that customer into a long-term repeat customer. And it can be as simple as streamlining some fields, adding some quotes or testimonials from some other people on the checkout for conversion. Like, it doesn't have to take long. But if anyone ever said to you, don't style your product page, just use the default product page, it's good. Like, everyone would say, you're crazy. I have to have a better product page. But yet so many people just use the default checkout.
The checkout just gets ignored and unloved. And you're right. That's the moment where they're entering the payment details is when trust becomes unusually important.
100%.
Bring us to our next mistake.
Well, I listed this one, and this is on the topic of subscriptions. I wrote mistake. Okay, well, it's, I guess number two, they think customers actually want their subscriptions. And I think what I mean by this is subscriptions have become, I would say, a way people buy. Like, it used to be a strategic advantage. If you had subscriptions, like, whatever, say you sell cat food, like 7 or 8 years ago, if you had subscriptions and your competitors didn't, you were better than them. You had an advantage that your competitors didn't. But now every single person that sells cat food has a subscription. Like, if you don't, you're missing out on a table stakes offering. It's no longer a differentiator. It's just the way people buy. Like, it's a shipping and billing decision more than anything else.
So if I offer a consumable good, for sure I should offer a subscription.
Correct. I mean, it's like not offering different forms of payment or different forms of shipping. It's just a way, like, I will not buy, I have a cat, so this is actually a good example. I will not buy cat food over and over. That is a waste of my time. I personally will only buy, is a predictable thing. My cat eats 3 cans a day. I will.
3 cans? How big is this cat?
Well, she's got a thyroid issue. So she just
eats. I'm sorry for shaming your cat.
No, I don't care. She's like 20 years old and she's on the thyroid meds, but she eats like a horse, but doesn't gain any weight. So anyways, but it's predictable. And so as an example, like, that's nothing to do. I always say, subscription is, it's a billing and a decision, a billing decision. It's not a relationship decision. So, like, you can have a subscription with your electrical company. You might not have a relationship with them, but you have a subscription. And people often mistake the two. A membership is a relational concept. And, like, you might have a member, you might consider yourself, whatever state you're from, I'm closest to the Minnesota Vikings. My father-in-law loves the Vikings. He is a Vikings member. He's got Viking stuff everywhere. If he had another baby, it would be put a Vikings onesie on that baby. But he doesn't pay a Vikings subscription, but he's a Vikings member, right? And so then what you actually have to do when you sell subscriptions is sell the membership. And that includes, like, all the other benefits that come with it. Maybe it's exclusive pricing, like we just talked about. Maybe it's access to you as a founder. Maybe it's once a month you do a Zoom call because you sell coffee and it's like, have coffee with your members or whatever.
So is it not enough to do subscribe and save?
Nope, which, absolutely not.
A trademark of Amazon. I don't think you could say subscribe and save.
A lot of stores do. Huh? It's interesting.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, I haven't heard of them coming after any, but that's interesting. They might.
We operate Harney.com, which sells tea. And if you're selling, caffeine is addictive. And so if you're selling a consumable good that also contains caffeine, oh my gosh, offer subscriptions. And this is top of mind because we were just trying to optimize the form. And we went with subscribe and saver. And then we made that, like, that, you know, our landing page, our menu link, like, we tried to make it a branded experience. And then we give them rewards where it's like, hey, you get, you know, if you keep the subscription, you get additional savings. Like, it starts at, oh, hey, we'll give you 10% off. I don't know what the numbers are exactly. But it's like, all right, if you subscribe for 6 months, it moves up to 20%.
But there's more benefits than just the product. Like, I often ask our subscription brands who use our subscription software, I say, like, what do your customers get when they subscribe? And if they say, well, they get my product every month at 5 or 10% off. And No, they're doomed. I can tell you, like, their subscribers will hit subscription fatigue. They'll probably average 3 to 5 months average subscription length. And then eventually the customers will churn and they'll get to a point where they're churning 8 to 10%. And it could happen at 1,000 customers, 10,000 customers, but then they can't onboard as more and their subscription's flatline. I can promise you any brand that just says, Well, they get the convenience of my subscription and at 5%.
Ours says like, never run out. You'll never run out. You'll be awash in tea bags. For this tea example, what would we offer them in addition to savings and never running out of tea?
I would offer exclusive pricing on other products on the store. That's like a first, like basic principle. Like if you're a member, you should get, you got to also start calling them members. Don't call them subscribers. So as a member, they should get exclusive pricing on every product, like 10% off any, all their one-time orders on other tea related products, access to products that non-members don't, or if they come out with a new flavor, email the subscribers first. So they get it before anyone else. They should get an exclusive offer every month. So we always say like, actually, this is an interesting stat. 92% of subscribers want more opportunities for one-time add-ons. So that means like they want, when they get the email come, yeah, your subscription is going out in 3 days. Here's an offer for 25% off our flavor of the month or our tea infuser. I don't even know, whatever it is, but they feel that because they're a subscriber, they should get those offers. They should log into their customer portal and see an offer there that other customers don't. They should get access to events. Like if you go to an event, a tea conference, and you have, and you rent out a tea house, only subscribers, members can go. Partner benefits is a big one that costs nothing. So find aligned companies or brands. So like if it's tea, let's say your angle is mindfulness. Maybe it's tea for skinny tea, or it could be something else. But let's just say it's like focus and mindfulness tea. Well, what other companies lean into that? Well, there's all these like different like notebook companies that have subscriptions, or different anything else in that space. Include a benefit in your subscription. So while I'm subscribed to this tea, I get 10% off at my mindfulness, this mindfulness notebook company or this mindfulness app. I get 10% off Calm or something else. And they will always be willing to give a benefit to your subscribers because that's like a new acquisition channel for them.
That's very clever. I already messaged my Mr. Harney of Harney Teas. I already messaged him to be like, hey, we got to call these subscribers members and then give them exclusive benefits. Because it's such good unlock that really it transforms
the way you think.
Yeah, the subscription's no longer transactional. Even when it had the savings, it was still just like, this is a transaction. You were going to make this transaction either one at a time, and now we're going to add the convenience to it. But you're right. There's no, you know, we need additional benefits to really separate it out. Okay, sold on that idea. Our next mistake is my personal pet peeve is people who have really not taken advantage of a good main menu. They screw up their main menu. And the dead giveaway is I land on the site and it goes like home, shop, blog, contact, about. It'll be either three items, always starting with home, or like 20 items. But the most important thing is shopping. And that'll just be buried under shop. And it'll be like a nested nightmare dropdown. If I want a good main menu, then my main menu should be exclusively products, collections, and landing pages. And unless you're sophisticated, if you're sophisticated enough to do a landing page, you probably already have your main menu figured out. But that's what I want. That main menu's job should really be to give me an overview of the store. It needs to go very broad. And then, you know, depending on how big the catalog is, I really don't want this main menu to be super nested. Like once I, you know, I don't want to have to go like three levels deep on it and there's 20 items in each thing. That doesn't help anybody.
No.
Just get them to, you know, help them segment themselves. Like I am looking for men's tops. That should be what I click on. And then once I'm in that collection page, I can either like, maybe you sell 12 items. Great. We don't have to, your work is done.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you have 100 pairs of pants for men. Okay. Then we have to add a little bit of filtering, either a sidebar filter or an interstitial collection page that has like, you know, shorts, dress pants, jeans, is something to break it into further categories. But we want to go broad to narrow in a series of steps, 1 to 3 steps.
You know, you actually taught me something about this one time. I don't even know that you know that you taught me this, but I think it was on a podcast, one of your episodes, or you might have posted it on social. I can't remember. But one time you said something, and I refer to this all the time. See, you're the wise old e-commerce guy here, but you said everything in your main menu should lead to money. And I remember that to this day. And I always go back to that. And every time, that's like the litmus test. Does it lead to money? And you could make a very loose argument that About Us pages leads to money, but no, it doesn't. Like, it needs to directly lead to money. So, like, I would just say to everyone listening, look at your main menu. Does it lead to money? Everything else should be in the footer or somewhere else. But do you remember saying that? I don't know where you posted that one time, and I still remember it to say.
Sounds like something I'd say.
Yeah.
You know what? I'll take credit for it.
Take full credit. That is a quote. Like, you should own that quote, because claim it, and don't, because it's such a great way to think about it. If it leads to money, there's an argument it could be in the main menu. Because I would also say, like, I agree with everything you said, and then maybe a couple I would add is, I like when I go to a site and there's a trending, like what's trending or what's hot. And I like when there's a what's on sale.
So I like sale. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Like, and those are, I like to quickly find what's on sale, and I want to know what other people are buying. I mean, that's just human nature, right? We want to know. So have a trending, and both of those are so easy to do in Shopify. Cause I think every collection you can sort by popular. So
yeah, sort by best-selling. And like, if you want to do a new collection, you sort by new. You didn't even have to make a new collection for it. You could like stick it in a query string.
Totally. Yeah. And like, don't make the customer go in and sort the collection themselves. Just make one that defaults. You can make a collection of your whole store, every single product, default it to best selling, and then add that to your main nav. And then there's your trending or hottest best selling, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. I bet you 90% of stores I go to, the main menu is not ideal.
Ever had a customer cancel an order because they were shopping while high, or because they broke up with their significant other? Those are real reasons customers could cancel, and they're a real headache for both you and your customers. Why should they have to email support to change, cancel, or update an order? Enter Cleverific. With Cleverific, your customers can edit their orders themselves through a self-service portal. That means fewer support tickets, faster shipping, and fewer returns. Everybody wins. Peter Manning, New York, cut their order support by 99% with Cleverific. Now it's your turn. Listeners of the Unofficial Shopify podcast get 50% off the Pro Plan. Just $49 a month. Go to cleverific.com/unofficial and use promo code KURT50 at checkout. It's less hassle, happier customers with Cleverific. When we do conversion rate optimization work, I think it'll be like, well, here's the 50 things. But the one that I think really makes the difference is you fix the main menu, because it's like the main menu is going to get people to the right thing as fast as possible. That makes a big difference. But also when I land on the site, the first time I pop open that menu, it's when they're set up correctly, I get an instant overview of, oh, this is what they sell.
Yep. I read an interesting stat. I'll go on to the next one right away, but 30% of people on mobile don't properly know how to navigate with like the hamburger, like ellipsis style menus up in the corner. And almost by default, most themes do that, but they get 30% less engagement in their menu when they collapse it to the hamburger menu.
The hamburger, the three.
Yeah. Lines. And like, I always do that because it looks better but then, if you want your site to convert better, consider having it open by default with fewer items so it doesn't look bad. But especially if you sell to an older demographic, like I always think, would my 70-year-old mom know how to open the hamburger menu and navigate three sub things in it? No, probably not. Right. So, something to consider and to test for sure.
So this leads us into our next mistake, and it's about jobs to be done. Tell me about that.
Okay. I put this in here because I said the mistake is that merchants don't know what the job to be done is of their site. And what I mean by this is everyone thinks their site is to sell, and really often it should be about telling the story of your brand, collecting information, segmenting the customer, positioning yourself against, like, where are you in the market against your competitors? Are you the bargain? Are you the most expensive? But often when I land on a site, it's too geared towards selling. It's like jumping. It's like you're going on a date and right away trying to
end the date with
get in the bed or get yeah. whatever, right? Like, so the job to be done of that first date is to know the person, for you to understand them, for them to understand you, to get their number, to get their information, all that. So what I mean by that, like in a practical sense, is I was on a site the other day that did this, I thought, really, really well. And I landed on the site and instantly a full page pop-up took over. And instead of it being a standard email collection, it said, you've won, no, unlock your mystery discount. Tell us what you're here for. And it was like a health site. So it said like gut health, stomach, mental focus. It had like five different things, crippled right?
Diarrhea.
It could have been, right?
But that's what I picked.
Right. So I clicked one. That I'm not saying which one I clicked. It's private. But I clicked one and then entered my email, got my discount. But what did they just do there? They, in the back end, segmented me. They learned a little bit about me. They learned that I'm here for gut health, not for something else. And they added me to a list about that. They now understand me better. And before they've even sold anything, they've learned that they can personalize the website. They could personalize the menu. They can tailor anything. They can tailor their email marketing. And I just thought that was so refreshing versus like the standard email pop-ups. And there's a lot of ways this can be done. But what this brand understands is that right when I land on the site, you've got an opportunity to get to know that customer and for them to get to know you, to tell the story. And I just think too many brands jump to the sale with and miss that opportunity.
You land on the site and it's like, hey, get $5 off. Just give us your email address. You're going to buy?
Exactly. Exactly.
I don't even know what I'm here for yet. I'd like that segmentation though. You know, you're using something like Klaviyo. You can write that into a customer profile property. And so now we can have much more relevant emails to the person. And we do a lot of work in aftermarket automotive. And that one's tough because, you know, you can have a website that sells for parts for 20 vehicles, but the person shopping only owns one of those. So now, you know, 95% of your catalog is irrelevant to that person. That's the advantage of segmentation. Like when you view it as we use the segmentation to not show the irrelevant stuff to the customer in both our marketing and on site, that's the magic. Like that's when you increase the relevance, now our funnel works better because it's not just noise anymore.
Totally, totally.
And in this case, it's like, I'm going to get ideally I'm going to get a welcome series tweaked from that gut health brand, tweaked to my crippling diarrhea. You're going to get it for, you know, like weight loss or healthy eating or whatever.
Hey, what do you say?
You know, I was going with what's the most common request they get.
And jobs to be done, for those who listening who maybe have never heard that terminology before, Google jobs to be done. It's a concept by Clayton Christensen. And the concept is, have you heard this concept?
Yeah.
Kurt? Yeah. Okay. So it's pretty common, but anyways, that everything in life does a job and it's not often what we think it is. So for example, if I buy a coffee at Starbucks, well, it's not just to quench my thirst and maybe give me energy. It's like, if I'm going on a drive, the job to be done of that coffee is actually to keep me company or like something to do. I need to fidget with the lid as I drive, or it's something to hold and warm at my desk. So the thing is like, it's not always the exact thing that we think it's doing. And so the job of your website is not just to sell. The job of your website is to build a relationship, tell your story, gather information about your customer, get to know them better. So as soon as you understand like, oh, okay, that's the job of my website. It's not just to sell. It becomes really effective. So anyways, Google jobs to be done. There's like a 15-minute video where he talks about that, and it will help understand that concept. And I think it'll be eye-opening for a lot of people about how they think about their website.
You know, we had in our list, our next one, I believe this is you. It says not focusing on the top 1% of customers. So I interpret this as the 80-20 rule, right? 80% of our revenue comes from 20% of our operations, of our actions. And that's just like a general rule for life. And you could try to optimize for it. Tell me about it.
Yeah, I do think this. That's so interesting that you say that. Like this, okay, I don't want to go too far back, but I do want to take a step back because I do think it is a great general rule for life. And actually, Shopify has this concept that I love with their employees. They call it the pointy rock analogy. You've probably heard it. I think
the pointy rock analogy. Yeah. All right, let's hear it.
Okay. Didn't Harley talk about this on your episode, or was it a different one? Okay.
I forget more things in a day.
Okay. So the pointy, maybe it's not called pointy rock analogy. I call it that, but here's the concept. Shopify wants pointy rocks. And so like typically when you do an employee review, like a monthly review or an annual review, like most companies, what they do is they say, okay, well, let's talk about your strengths and your weaknesses. And let's focus on your weaknesses and let's see if we can improve them. What Shopify does is they say, let's talk about your strengths. Let's forget about your weaknesses. And how do we double down on your strengths? And the concept is they want pointy rocks versus river stones. River stones are like in the water and they're rounded and they're kind of boring and they're just average. But a pointy rock, like you might have someone who's like super, super good at one thing, maybe horrible at everything else, but they're the best at like AI or AR, VR, something like for product images or something. Like they have this really, really unique talent. And so they focus on that. So yes, in life, focusing on the narrow, what you're really good at, I think is a really winning strategy. Now, how that relates to e-commerce is too many brands focus on things like the 80% of the customers that don't want your products, that don't open your email. Like I've actually talked to brands that they send an email out to everyone and they get a bit of a high unsubscribe rate, like maybe 4% of people unsubscribe. And then they stop sending emails. Like they go, no, we're emailing too much. Okay. Let's only email once a month. And I just say like, you know what? Those weren't your customers anyway. Like you should be emailing more, blow them out and cater to your core customers, right? Sorry, what are you going to say?
Yeah, you can keep a low unsubscribe rate, a low spam rate, and a low everything else rate, click-through and purchase rate, by just sending really safe, generic emails.
Yeah.
It's like you got to turn the screws a little bit. You have to have something to get their attention. And when you do that, fundamentally, you will lose the people who were not your customers to begin with.
Totally. Exactly. And some people call it the blow out the 20. It's like a percentage of your email subscribers are going to unsubscribe anyway. Better to email every week and just let them unsubscribe. And at least you're giving like good content to the people that actually want your emails than trying to not offend the others.
Well, it's tough because like often we apply our rules of society to marketing, right?
Right.
If I'm at a dinner party and I got 20% of the guests to leave, I really messed up that dinner party. But in an email campaign,
true. You know,
if I got, like I lost 20%, but then made X much back in revenue, well, so that was a successful campaign.
So good. Right. Yeah. And so I think with our e-commerce stores, that any store that if you analyze it, the top 20% usually makes roughly 80% of your revenue. And actually there's a data point that the top 1% for a lot of stores can generate up to 40%. So you've got these like super, super fans that they don't just repeat buy. They're buying like 10, 12, 20 times.
This goes to the top, man. This is the premise of the title of your podcast, 1%. Why is it called 1%?
I think 1% is this magical number that can apply to so many things. And so the reason I originally named it that was because there's this interesting data point that the top 1% of stores on Shopify make about 97% of its GMV, the gross merchant volume of the whole platform. Like it's a crazy, crazy number. And so then you think, well, what are they doing differently? Like what is that 1% doing differently? There's the concept of this that we just talked about. The top 1% of your customers make close to 50% of their revenue. I love this principle that have you heard of, if you increase something 1% each day, do you think you are by the end of the year?
How much?
37 times. So 3,700% better. And it's like, if you can get 1%, like, you know, say you do pushups and you just do 1% more pushup each day. It's hard to do with a percent on a pushups, but anything that you do 1% better each day is 37 times better after a year. So 1% kind of to me is this magical number. And I named it the Shopify 1% podcast because it was like, how do you be in the top 1%? How do you do the things the top 1% do? And how do you be 1% better each day? And so it's this magical number to me.
I love it. We're not going to do better than that. So we're going to move on to number five.
Okay, all right, let's hear one last thing on this 1%. Okay. This one, I think all I'll say on this is every single store has the concept of the 1,000 true fans.
Yes.
It's find your 1,000 true fans and you have a successful business. Everyone listening right now, I guarantee, has true fans. You can find them by going in your run a report, find customers that have ordered more than once, who've mentioned you on social media, who shared a post about their product, done an unboxing video or something. But I guarantee you have true fans. Find them. Maybe it's 10, maybe it's 50, but find who your true fans are and then find out why they're your true fans. To call them up, talk to them about why they buy your product, because what you want to do is you want to find more people like them, understand who they are, versus if you have 20,000 customers, but you only have like 800 true fans, focus on them, build for them, talk their language, write your copy for them, everything you do, and you want to find more of them, because that's your channel for growth versus, oh, these people stopped buying. I'm going to survey and find out why and try to improve it. Forget about them. Like, focus on the top.
Double down on what works. Double down on the people buying.
Exactly.
Not the people who aren't buying.
Correct.
Okay. It's a good reminder. All right. The other pet peeves, one of the missed opportunities I see are anemic product pages. Like these product pages that feel like an afterthought. You know, we invested in everything else, in the brand, and we wrote our story page. We've got our catalog, our product in there, and our marketing. But then the product page itself will be really weak. It'll be like our product photos. They'll have some good product photos, but they're just on white and they're very sterile. And then just like a short description with some bullet points. It's not enough. Like, go to any successful Amazon listing. They'll have the product photo, but then they'll also have video, and the product photo will have action shots. Oh my gosh, I want action shots so badly on every Shopify store. And then they'll annotate the product photos, where like the product photo will have like little tool tips in there that call out features of the product. All right, so just doing that, our product media becomes significantly better and more convincing, because we know it's about half of people, when they land on a product page, the first thing they do is start looking through the product photos. So once I've got their attention with that, they probably have questions. We need to tell them more. And so in my product description, man, I want reviews. I want a subtitle, a little subheading, maybe a pull quote from a customer review. I want a more narrative description. I want those bullet points, but then I want a longer description. And, you know, if there's technical details, I want those too, where like we have a client who sells a lot of purses online. And for her, she'll list inner and outer dimensions. And then like we'll try to give people a sense of what will fit in the bag. And we'll show a person carrying the bag, which that really helps, you know, give you an idea of like, well, this is how you would style it. And this is, and like, this is a sense of the size of the bag.
So good. Selling the benefits.
Yeah. Or like you get really fancy, you know, and this depends like how many products you sell and what your resources are in content, but having like, you know, treating that sales page like a landing page, where now we have like a much more narrative format and we have called out feature sections. Where we're like, hey, this is, you know, like this bag has these magnetic pockets and they're the coolest thing ever. And we have like a little looped, muted, animated video showing how that feature works. And it's like, it's easy to ignore and just skip that part. But for the person who's browsing the site and is like looking for an excuse to buy, you just have to help show it to them, help convince them. Because the purchase decision happens on that product page. And when it's like just a really anemic, really lame product page. It's soggy. It's not doing a lot. It's just like, we check the boxes for the bare minimum. Don't be surprised when the add to cart rate is low and people don't buy.
I think you can get creative too. You mentioned like the number one place people go is they open up the product images. And like a lot of people sometimes don't scroll. There's that whole above the fold, like a certain percentage don't go down. On one store, we put Instagram comments. We took screenshots of people posting their product on Instagram, and it's saying like, oh my gosh, I love this. This is the best ever. And then all the comments, and then we took a screenshot and kind of worked that in between some of the product photos. So like the first five things were product photo, then a screenshot of like what people are saying on social. So like,
that's since really the, good.
Since
that's user generated content and social proof.
Right. Within the product photos. So even if they don't scroll to the bottom, which a percentage of people won't, they still see that in there, right? So you can work some of that stuff in there more than just product photos.
That's really good.
I put, I don't know if you saw on our list there, but I put 5B on this one, which I think you're so bang on. And I just wanted to add that I think maybe a way people could think about this is, if your product page was a landing page, would it work? Like, would you build a landing page that way? And then most people will kind of sheepishly tail between the legs. Oh no, that would be a really crappy landing page. Like, no, it's not. Like, my product page is like an order taking page. That's it. But like, if you were paying money for ads, you would build out a long form landing page with video, with testimonials, with like ping pong style things. And by ping pong style, like going back and forth with different features of the product, really explaining, like explainer videos, like just a long form landing page. Now, if you're running paid ads, you want to have a landing page that converts. I guess where I'm going with this is, like, that would be an ideal product page. One of the mistakes people make is they think, oh, I should send my ad traffic to my product pages, but their product pages aren't any remotely close to what a landing page is or should be. And so maybe a good way to think about how should I make my product pages look is, they should just look like a landing page. Like, that's, and I a couple ones that I think do this really well, if you're like, well, what does that look like? There's a earphone company called Master and Dynamic. They are amazing. Just click on any of their products, go on their headphones or something. As you scroll down, it's like big imagery. There's videos, there's comparison tables. Like, what is this? How does this compare to the competition?
Yeah, this one's nice.
Yeah, so, so good. Timbuktu also does this really well. They're a bag company out of San Francisco. If you click on any of their backpacks, like, as you scroll down, there's a video of someone opening it, someone doing like a time-lapse thing of like putting products in the bag, and then another video. And it's just like, you keep scrolling and scrolling. And that's what I mean by like a long form landing page style product page. And those are pretty easy to create in Shopify. You just create sections and different product templates. And they have, like, I know Timbuktu, we actually worked with them for a long time. They just have like a different template for their backpacks and then for their suitcases. And then a lot of that stuff is like, it's actually cookie cutter. Like, every backpack has the same section for showing what goes in a backpack and stuff like that. So it's not as hard to do as you might think. Like, you don't have to create these whole pages every single time. Some of it can be templated, but anyways, check those ones out.
No, for sure.
Yeah.
And Timbuktu's is really good.
Mm-hmm.
That one, Timbuktu, I relate to a lot. Just could we built, Tactical Baby Gear uses a like they sell bags, and it's a really similar format. In fact, I sent Timbuktu to them and was like, hey, here's some inspiration. That's a good looking site. Are your upsells stuck in the Stone Age? Your store runs on data, so why aren't your upsells? Outdated upsell apps make you guess, test, and tweak manually. That's costing you money. Zipify one-click upsell changes everything. Its AI engine automates upsells, analyzing every cart in real time to offer the highest converting product. No guesswork, no setup, just results. Over 10,000 Shopify stores trust OCU, and it's already generated nearly $1 billion in extra revenue. So flip the switch and let AI handle your upsells. Try Zipify one-click upsell free for 30 days at zipify.com/Kurt. That's zipify.com/KURT. Don't leave money on the table. Start AI-powered upselling today. Okay, what do we have next on our list?
Where do we want to go here? We got a few more. Oh,
well, I think, you know, what works with this that leads right into this one is lack of supporting brand content, which I think, I don't know if you put this in here, you said, AKA, become a soulless e-com zombie.
Yes, I added that.
I see these sites a lot. They're definitely, I get it. It's like, it'll be someone who is earlier in the journey and they don't just have, like, you end up with a backlog of content when you do this long enough, or they're not confident in the content. And so instead they go to ChatGPT and they're like, I own this business. My name is this. Write me an about page. And then they copy paste it because it's like grammatically correct. The problem is that means that now everyone can do that, right? And so table stakes is no longer just like we had an about page. Now I need to see you. I need to know who the founder is. I want your story. I want to see who I'm buying from. I want the person, not the brand. Ideally, I have video, but I get it's intimidating. Feeling like a proper brand where it feels like this is a business. And that could take the form of there's an address in the footer you know, so we know this is a physical place and there's a phone number I could call. In addition to, there's a story and there's like reasoning behind this, and they do brand collabs. All that stuff is cumulative, and at some point it trips a trigger in our brain and go, this is a real business. This is a real brand. I don't know where that line is, and it's probably different for everybody, but like, that's the thing you want to work toward. I don't just want like copy pasted AI slop. We have to go a little bit past that. And suddenly this goes from like transactional to the customers, they're making the purchase decision, buying the product, but they're also buying into the story and the brand because a little bit they want to support you.
Totally. And I think this is going to get more and more important as AI is getting used more and more too, right? It's so tempting to use it for everything, but then you lose your soul. So, yeah. And I think, like, I don't know, a few years ago, I always like any drop shipping site you go to, like I say drop shipping, this is no offense to anyone that drop ships, but there's a lot of sites that
you said drop shipping with stank on it. It was quite derisive. Okay, it was clear where Jay stands on dropshipping.
I don't have an issue with drop shipping, but when they're like completely, there's no, it's like you land on the site and all it is just drop ship products connected to Uberlow or some dropship catalog, and it's just,
there's usually a lot of countdown timers.
Yeah, it's just
some lightning bolt emojis. I don't know why they're always there.
Yes, everything, the sale ends in 10 minutes when you add it to cart. There's only one left in stock, and
oh man, and that stuff, like, I mean, flat out that it's illegal to do stuff like that.
Yeah,
to,
it
like,
is
fake
now, yeah.
Urgency, fake scarcity, but these sites clearly do it anyway.
And I'm afraid to buy from sites like that now because my I don't actually ask this question in my head, but subconsciously when I land on the site, my brain is going to like any customer, is this legit? Are they real? Should be any concern here? Are they authentic? Like, there's all these checklists. Like, I need to see social proof. I know, like, the brain needs to answer all these questions within a couple seconds of landing on a site. And like, there's certain drop shipping sites I land on that instantly I know that this is not somewhere I want to be ordering. This might take 6 weeks to get here. It's going to come from overseas and it's not even maybe going to come. I feel like that's happening now with AI generated content on sites. Like, people's radar is going to go off and be like, doesn't feel right. And so like, the authenticity has to come through instantly too. Yeah.
Yeah. During the pandemic, we all became e-commerce shoppers. Like, online shopping just went up significantly during that time. And in doing so, everyone's more experienced. And so it's more than just like, I threw together a Shopify store and I could run ads to it right now. People will expect more out of it to pass that litmus test of, is this legitimate or not? And then on top of it, like, as we see more and more AI content, we are more suspicious of things that feel inauthentic. And so like, that's the bar we're trying to pass here. The one I want to know, this is you. I did not write this. It says, stuck on the paid ad nipple. And then the first bullet point to yourself is, get off the nipple, !
See, you know, it's not AI generated because
I
don't think ChatGPT would write get off the nipple. So, so this is obviously the term, you know, like when a child is on the nipple too long, it's easy and the milk is good, but at some point you got to get off the nipple. You got to wean them off. And paid ads, I mean, here's the bottom line. Do you think paid ads are going to get any cheaper? No, they're only going to go up. Do you think it's healthy to build a business on paid ads? No. But the problem is it's so tempting. It works. You get sales, but it builds a very unhealthy business where, especially if something goes wrong, and like last couple of years we've seen with Temu and other players coming in and buying up so much ad that it's driven up ad costs even more. Now with like AI buying ads and affecting the algorithm, like, it's going to get even more expensive. And so now is the time to get off the nipple and master your owned audience. And owned audience is your email list, your SMS list, your influencers, your word of mouth, anything that you own that like
SEO.
SEO is a big one. Yeah.
I would say the other one that we often get left out because we're so focused on digital is in-person events.
Mm-hmm.
In-person events can really be quite incredible and make an impression on people where you will stay top of mind way longer than with any of the online sources.
Yep. And I wrote, blogs is such a big one. I feel like blogs has been left behind And there is such a huge opportunity. Like, go on any site and find a product they're selling. Like, let's just use that gut health. There's a lot of blogs on gut health because there's health blogs, but maybe this isn't the best example. But it's so easy now to create content. And for this one, I'm not overly against using AI to create blogs, but create content on the products you sell and have a blog. Like, just having a blog right now, I think, I don't know why, it's been kind of a little bit disregarded, blogs. And I think there's an opportunity to create content and rank, like, just organically for stuff quite easily. And so maybe now's the time for people to relook at having a blog, that if they haven't, to reconsider. Well,
and
that
these AI search people are like, oh, SEO is dead. But where do you think these AI search tools are getting their information? It is, if you rank, you know, in the top three, it is very easy to have whatever crazy thing you said get included in the AI answer. And so if you declare, like, if you're making recommendations of your own products in some blog article, or maybe, you know, someone else posted and someone asked, like, hey, what's the best robot vacuum? And you happen to be in that listicle, well, you know, suddenly the AI is going to say you're the best robot vacuum. And so that's why it's easy to dismiss SEO in blogs. And I 100% would not do it. In the face of AI, they're getting the info from somewhere and you want it to be you.
Yep. 100%.
So, yeah. All right, we got Jay off the paid ad nipple. And all right, there's one, it says they screw up referrals, and there's no notes in here. So I'm wondering
I left this one vague.
How does one screw up referrals?
Okay, here's the thing. Kind of maybe ties in a little bit into the getting off the paid nipple a little bit. But I'm going to give a link to this talk I did at Sub Summit a couple years ago. And I called it the subscription death curve. But bottom line, I kind of try to sum this up in a minute or two, is almost every brand, whether even one time or subscription, they flatline. They get to a point where their growth just, like, they're losing as many customers a month as they're gaining. And it, like I said, it could happen at 1,000 customers, 10,000, but at some point they hit this death curve where they're flat. And you can't acquire more customers to get out of it. You just will hit that curve a little bit higher. You can't reduce your churn enough. It would just hit that death curve a little bit further out. The only way to have long-term sustainable growth is through a referral system where customers recommend, on average, one or more other customers. So this is, it's called a viral coefficient. And as long as you have a viral coefficient of one or greater, so it can be 1.001. And what that means is, on average, a customer refers one other customer. So some customers might refer five, some might refer zero, but on average, a customer refers one or more. If you have that, you don't need to spend a penny on paid advertising. Zero, nothing. You'll grow exponentially, like that hockey stick growth curve, forever. Now, the problem is most people run these, like, share 10, get 10, give 5% off. And it's just noise. Nobody even shares those. Like, I buy stuff all the time online. I get the link, share with a friend, get 10% off. Like, I never share it. I'm not going to go to Facebook and, like, hey, does anybody want 10% off Timbuktu? Probably not. But imagine, let's use this gut health example that we were talking about earlier. Imagine I buy something from them, or I subscribe, and then I get an email from them, maybe pretending from the founder, and they say, Jay, thank you so much for subscribing. We are giving you three unique coupon codes. We can only give you three, but they are for 2 months or 3 months completely free of a subscription. We know we're trying to change gut health for the world, and these codes will give someone in your life that you care about 3 months free of this gut health product. So now what do? I right away start to think, okay, who do I know needs?
Who else has crippling diarrhea?
Kurt has crippling diarrhea. I'm going to.
Okay, then now I'm in.
And what I did is I pre-qualified the perfect customer for them as well too, right? So it's interesting.
Those of us with crippling diarrhea. I really derailed this.
You remember Clubhouse during the pandemic?
Yeah, like, that was brief.
It had the fastest growth ever. But then eventually, like, Twitter launched Spaces, and there was other things that came out that affected it. But what was interesting about it is you couldn't even sign up for it. There was no sign, and you could only join if someone referred you. But it was the fastest growing social media platform, like, at that time in history. But you couldn't even sign up for it. It was bizarre, right? You'd think, like, well, imagine TikTok, you couldn't sign up for it. You had to get referred by a friend. And so, but what was powerful about that is each person that joined got five referral links. And so I remember going to someone and saying, hey, like, are you actually going to use this? Because I only got five. And so all they need for viral growth is a one referral rate, but they shared five. So like you make it feel exclusive, you make it feel limited, and you make it extremely valuable. And if you give referral opportunities like that to your customer, you will, if you can hit that viral coefficient of people referring at least one customer more, you will be the most successful e-commerce company in the world. So that's, I think so many people just implement bland, refer, give someone 10% off, and it doesn't move the needle at all. You have to give extremely valuable, limited offers that they can give to a select group of people. So that's what I mean by that. And I'll make sure we put the link in the show notes. There's like a 45-minute talk on this. It's something I feel very passionate about, but I just summed up in 2 minutes. So,
all right, we gotta wrap it up. The final mistake was not taking advantage of international markets. A majority of the stores I work on do not take advantage of international, like in a proper way. And it's because it's intimidating. Today, it is easier than ever. And it is because of Shopify's tooling. You know, Shopify Markets really makes this quite easy if you want to attempt to sell internationally. And it's not something I would just do flippantly, but for sure there is opportunity there. Like if you're feeling like you have exhausted your home market, well, there are other markets, right? Other, and in this, we assume you're English speaking. There are other English speaking markets. So it's certainly something I would explore and not ignore. All right. 100%. We managed to get through the top 10 mistakes. I am so thrilled to have this episode and to have recorded with you, Jay.
Me too.
Yeah, this is a good one. Okay. What's the bottom line? What's our big takeaway for folks?
I think almost everything we talked about today was on giving more attention to your existing customers, increasing LTV. We talked a little bit about acquisition, but I think if you summed up as a whole, most brands kind of don't focus enough on retention and leaning into their top 1% of customers, their top 1,000, you know, their true fans. Focus more on the customers you have. There's a great quote by Seth Godin that says, don't find people for your products, find products for your people. And I think more brands could do that by they have the people, but the traffic is there. They're just not optimizing it and leaning into the customers they already have. So I think that maybe could sum it up as a big takeaway.
Man, that's perfect. I'm not going to do better than that. Jay, this is great. thanks for doing this with me.
My pleasure, man. So fun.
Crowdfunding campaigns are great. You can add social proof and urgency to your product pre-orders while reducing risk of failure. But with traditional crowdfunding platforms, you're paying high fees and giving away control, all while your campaign is lost in a sea of similar offers. It can be frustrating. That's why we built Crowdfunder, the Shopify app that turns your Shopify product pages into your own independent crowdfunding campaigns. We originally created Crowdfunder for our private clients, and it was so successful, we turned it into an app that anyone can use. Today, merchants using Crowdfunder have raised millions collectively. With Crowdfunder, you'll enjoy real-time tracking, full campaign control, and direct customer engagement. And it's part of the Built for Shopify program, so you know it's easy to use. So say goodbye to high fees and hello to successful store-based crowdfunding. Start your free trial and transform your Shopify store into a pre-order powerhouse today. Search Crowdfunder in the Shopify App Store to get started.